The news has become the new American pastime. We spend an inordinate amount of energy checking on it via all forms of electronics. The news molds the way in which we perceive reality, yet few would say it allows us to fully understand the world around us. But what is the news? What should be its purpose? How can we consume it in a way that helps us live better lives? We are never really taught how to make sense of the torrent of the news that we face every day, according to our next guest, Alain de Botton, who is author of the best-selling The Architecture of Happiness. He joins us this morning to talk about his new book, The News, A User's Manual, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him back to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you here. So what got you thinking about the news and ultimately to create a user's guide?
Look, I think partly it's the sense that the news is normal. We've got this assumption that checking the news is one of the most normal and, in a way, respectable activities. It's something you grow up doing. If you're an educated household, you may take a paper. It's just something that is considered deeply normal. And yet it is full of unspoken, very bizarre assumptions that I wanted to bring to the fore. I'm struck by the lack of education. You know, we're very uneducated consumers of the news. We're gradually becoming better, more aware consumers of food. But when it comes to news, we're still just kind of, you know, not quite aware of the stuff that we're putting into our minds every day. And because of the proliferation of news sites, the problem is getting ever more acute. There's a kind of news addiction going on and a very little room to step back and think, what's it all for? You know, I should add, of course, there are many, many people who are analyzing the news as an industry, people who are saying, you know, how are news organizations going to fund themselves, etc. This is not particularly my area of focus. My area of focus is the consumer, you, the news user, and that is a slightly different and perhaps more original starting point.
When you talk about education, how do you think people should be educated? What should be part of that curriculum?
Look, I mean, there are very big, in a way, simple points, and then there are more subtle local points. The very basic one must be that this thing that we call the news is not the news, it's some news. Some news that's been gathered by some people fishing around with their nets in the slew of billions of stories that happen to humans every day and packaging it up for our entertainment mostly. And we need to be aware of that. It is a set of narratives. It is not reality. And what tends to go wrong, of course, is that people think that the news has gathered together every important insight that is out there. I mean, think of the New York Times famously saying, you know, all the news that's fit to print. I mean, one would start with that statement and go, that has to be false. of course, the New York Times doesn't know what's fit to print. I mean, they missed the entire financial crisis, which was more or less on their doorstep. So, I mean, you know, these guys, of course they don't know what's fit to print. And it's very, very dangerous to assume that they do. So, you know, keeping your wits about you is one of the first sort of overwhelming lessons of all this.
You make an interesting statement in the book, and you're asking the question, why do we as an audience keep checking the news? And your answer in part is dread.
Look, a lot of it is to do with fear. The news terrifies us. It enjoys terrifying us because it knows that's what keeps us returning. So it has a bevy of a very alarming sounding stories at any time. The one thing the news never, ever tells you is, it will pass, and if it doesn't, you will die. And if you die, that's okay, because lots of people have done that before you. It doesn't teach resilience. It doesn't teach stoicism. It teaches panic, because panic sells. And so it creates a kind of backdrop of anxiety, which is terribly, really takes its toll on us without necessarily us even noticing. Quite unfairly so. I mean, anyone who's broken down on a side of a road on a dark night will know that the first thought that comes to mind is, anyone I meet is going to be an axe murderer. They're going to chop me up in small pieces and scatter me through the woods, or they're a pedophile or a weirdo or a pervert or a madman, because we all read the news, and the news tells us that humanity is made up of these people. It isn't necessarily. 99.9% of people are very nice, a fact that the news very much keeps us away from recognizing. So, all of this important to teach people.
You write about confusion, boredom, and distraction, and how they are very much elements in the news cycle.
Yes, I mean, one of the things about the news is that many items of news, particularly so-called serious news, are a bit puzzling, and if we're honest with ourselves, a bit boring. Like, we might hear a fact like, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, 300 people died yesterday. And we think, I don't know, I'm going to go and make some tea, or I'm going to go to sleep now. It doesn't grip us with the sort of urgency that we might assume that these so-called serious items should. What's going on there? Have we become monsters? Are we unable to empathize with our fellow human beings? No, it's just that we have to recognize that the challenge of news nowadays is how can we develop an interest in a lot of things that are paraded before us? You know, news started as professional information, mostly for governments and businesses. So what we know as foreign news started its life as diplomatic cables for governments that needed to know if they were going to invade a country or fund a country, etc. And nowadays, a very generous democratic impulse means that the news is for everyone. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone knows what to do with it. And the news is often presented to us in a slightly half-baked, half sort of digested form. So people will say things like, Budget Senate Committee approves new bill in surprise decision. And we think, what? I don't know. What does that mean? What's that really about? And really, in order to have that explained, you need to have a lot more what gets called context. But it's really a way of saying, what's this story really about? Where does its core kind of human interest lie? And it might be that story is really about the wonders of administration in a modern economy or something like that. But, it doesn't you've got to step right back. We're often staring at these little nuggets of news from way too close.
There is, of course, the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads. And you talk in the book about why or ask the question of why news organizations focus so much on the darkness, focus so much on the dark side.
Look, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think, horror stories have things to tell us. The reason why I say that is because I'm a keen reader of Aristotle, and Aristotle tells us in his famous book, The Poetics, that horror stories have a vital task in civilizing nations. It was Aristotle's insight that, murders, tragedies, incest, etc., they are all part of what the population needs to read about, but he was very keen on this point, they have to read about it in a certain way. And that way is with a certain kind of sensitivity and insight, which will mean that the horror story becomes an occasion for catharsis, for fear of a good kind and pity of a good kind. And that's what we know as the art form that we call tragedy. So when people sat in ancient Athens and looked at the plays of Euripides and Sophocles, they were taking in stories that were remarkably similar to things you'd find in the New York Post or the Daily Mail, stories of incest and murder and disaster. But they were doing so with a particular end in mind, and the end was to kind of understand the human condition better. And that sounds terribly pretentious, but it's striking how, bad news of this kind of, dramatic kind is often abandoned to the popular news outlets, who tend to present it to us as an occasion merely for a kind of bloodthirsty titillation, rather than a kind of, really searing and interesting insight into the human condition. So don't get me wrong, I'm not against this kind of news, because it's very popular and clearly it's tapping into something very important. But I think we can go a whole lot further in kind of knowing what to do with this stuff.
What about the types of stories? I mean, does it matter what type of story we're talking about? So if it's a political story, is different in how it is told, obviously, than a human interest story or something about a very specific accident or fire or explosion. But politics seems to be a different animal when it comes to news coverage.
Look, my view is that you can start with anything, and I think this division between the high and the low, doesn't really stand up to scrutiny. I mean, if you look at most of the greatest works of art of our civilization, they tend to be stories that if you found them in a news item would be pretty trivial. You know, man shoots wife, woman jumps under train, etc. These are the things, you know, when they're in the hands of Flaubert and Tolstoy, they become very deep and important stories. So I think it's... it's about the presentation of information. You know, the thing about the news is that it starts from the idea that in order to be a good journalist, what you really need to do is to collect information accurately. And though that's definitely one of the skills that you need, the other thing you, of course, really need is presentational skills, what we tend to call colloquially art. And the reason why a lot of news doesn't have the impact it should is that it's been told to us in the wrong way. You know, when Shakespeare tells us about Italian politics in Julius Caesar, we're gripped. You know, we'll sit through 3 hours of this stuff, and it's completely interesting. When, you know, the New York Times guys tell us the story of, you know, the latest machinations in Italian politics, we kind of fall asleep. And the reason is not, you know, not to be unfair to these people, they can't be Shakespeare, but they can at least learn some of the lessons of Shakespeare, which is you need to get at the material from a certain angle. Otherwise, however carefully you've been, you know, collecting the quotes and getting the information down, people just won't care. And so indifference to certain stories is a major factor in the kind of consumption of news nowadays.
Alain de Botton is the author of The News, a user's manual. It is published by Pantheon. When it comes to us, of what ultimately we are interested in hearing about and reading about and learning more about, how much of it is us telling the news industry what we want, and how much of it do you believe is them telling or believing or thinking they know what we want?
Look, I mean, it's kind of chicken and egg. You know, people say things like, Americans have the news they deserve. And I think that's kind of a mean-minded judgment, because it's like saying, Americans have, the petroleum industry they deserve or the food industry they deserve. You know, it's not necessarily the case. I think that we're still at the dawn of the age of news. We kind of think we've done it all and there's a million news outlets and kind of everything's been tried. I don't think it has. I think we're still learning kind of what to feed ourselves news-wise. And there is this distinction, of course, between the popular and the serious. And serious journalists, people like, you know, Glenn Greenwald, worry tremendously about, the audience and think that the audience is kind of a bit stupid and worry about how important news will get to interest a mass audience. I think this is a really serious issue. How do you make sure that the important is popular? Because it comes down to a problem of art. And the danger is that high-minded news organizations like The Guardian or The New York Times tend to think, look, we're in the business of just telling the people what matters and hoping for the best. But it's not really enough when the competition is some very skilled news outlets. And, you know, take something like the Daily Mail. It's so skilled. It's the most popular English language outlet. It is so skilled at doing what it does. It just grips you. It's as addictive as cocaine. And it's, that's why it's got its 50 million daily users. I mean, it's astonishing. It's a challenge that the serious news people need to take on board in a way that I think they haven't to date.
Do you believe that this is a user's manual that is something that can be used around the world, in the sense of, you just gave examples, we're talking to you from, you're in the UK, of course we're here in the States, so are the problems rather fundamental to the industry?
Absolutely. You find the problems everywhere. Everywhere in the developed world, you get some basic things. There's a lot of news, and people don't necessarily know how to prioritize. The amount of news. You know, it used to be believed that the dream was, if you get people information, then good things will happen, and you will have an awakened population, a politically conscious population, and that will mean that democratic politicians will be able to do the things they have to do for the flourishing of the nation. And censorship has always been opposed by, you know, serious and intelligent people because it stymies the democratic process. The problem is, you know, if you want to make a population supine and accepting of the status quo, it's almost like nowadays you have a choice. Either you censor the news, the kind of North Korean option, and then no one knows what's going on, or in a kind of more sinister and depressing way, you just give people so much news that they can't work out what's important to them. They can't prioritize anymore. They can't follow a story. If you ask most people what was in the news last week, they won't know. Your mind goes blank. So we spend so much time concentrating on material that leaves an unbelievably tentative, fragile kind of architecture in our minds. And that's bizarre and something that we need to get better at and, you know, to get to grips with. And I think part of it is just that the news comes at us with its sonorous language, its music, its deep gravelly voices, and tells us, you know, hey, listen to this. It matters immensely. And very often, if we take the story apart, it doesn't necessarily matter, or there are definitely things that matter, but it's not that. And that's why, you know, nations like the United States have managed to miss enormous stories like the financial crisis, like the true situation in the Middle East. Time and time again, these big stories have been missed because even though there's a proliferation of outlets, there's sometimes a groupthink and an inability to break out of a kind of homogenous mindset. And so it's, you know, it's very important, dangerous stuff we're dealing with here.
And yet, when it comes to resources, few news organizations are growing by leaps and bounds as terms of reporters and employees, no matter how you get it, whether it be in the printed form or online or by subscription. And so you have this public who wants and needs this information, and yet a business model that is hard to keep up.
Yes, look, I mean, there is, there is this issue of the business model. I'm not pessimistic at all. It's all going to be solved when micropayments come in, which they will do within the next 5 years. Most audiences are completely fine with paying a few cents for each story that they view. You know, if you said to somebody, would you like to pay a cent to read this thing? Yeah, sure, I'll pay that. So it's not that people aren't willing to pay. What they're not willing to do is take out a year's subscription, you know, remove their credit, get their credit card, upload their details, and commit to a year or more of, a commitment to a news outlet. It's like saying, you know, go into a news agent and you can only buy a newspaper if you commit to taking out a year's subscription. Of course, no one would buy the paper. So what we've got is just a payment problem. It's not that people aren't willing to pay for news. They're just not willing to take out their credit card every time they want to read a story. And it's, you know, it's slightly mystifying why this thing hasn't been cracked. But as soon as it is, you will see, you know, huge funds being directed towards news outlets. It's a temporary blip, very painful, but I don't see it as a long-term problem. I think micropayments will solve this.
In the conclusion of your book, you talk about personalization, which I think is interesting, because ultimately then that will say, okay, we don't have to read what you are giving us in that paper, and this is what we're presenting to you. You pretty much choose what you want.
Yes, I mean, in a way, personalized news is a utopian, wonderful fantasy. And that is the idea that you will get one day all the news that you need, particularly for you. You know, because we're all aware that some of the news we get isn't really relevant to us. So imagine a world in which we would get all the information we need to be the best of ourselves, to be, you know, who we really could be. That would be amazing. The problem is that what we now have at the moment with things like Google News is the ability to choose news sources. But the big problem is that we don't understand ourselves. So when we're programming this machine, we don't really know what we need. It may be that we want lots of sports news, but we don't need lots of sports news. It may be that we think we're against celebrity news, but actually celebrities have got things to teach us, or whatever it is. So in other words, personalized news doesn't just depend on us being able to choose. It also depends on us properly understanding ourselves. And that's something we haven't yet cracked. So before programming that, you know, Google computer, you need to go and see a psychoanalyst and work out who you really are and where you're headed in life. And we're not there yet. So I think it's coming in 100 years, you know, properly personalized news. What we've got at the moment isn't that. And I think that, you know, probably in the circumstances, we'd be better off leaving it to an editor because they probably still have a better chance of making that judgment than we do.
I mean, on that, and you talk about the utopian nature, but in the book you say, even if by a succession of miracles the news managed one day to do all of what you outline here, we should still retain a handful of reasons for ongoing caution.
Yes. I mean, even the ideal news, you know, I think ultimately what the news is competing with is the news from our own lives. And not to be mystical about this or kind of supernatural, news from ourselves, you know, news from our deeper selves. We need to spend time, you know, asking what we think about things and what we are picking up through our own senses, the people around us, and, you know, what our own hearts and minds are telling us. And that can be very hard when there's a deluge of news around that seems so important. You know, someone's telling us there's a crisis in Bolivia, there's been a coup in, you know, the Ukraine, there's been this and that and the other. And that gets in the way of the conversation we might be trying to have with those closest to us and also the conversation we're having with ourselves. So that's something we need to keep watching. Unlike previous generations, we almost need to make a conscious effort to have regular news Sabbaths, moments when we're cut off from the news and are alive to, as it were, our own news.
The name of the book is The News, a User's Manual. It is published by Pantheon. Alain de Botton, I thank you so much for being with us this morning and sharing your expertise. A great pleasure, as always.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The News, a User's Manual. It's published by Pantheon. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.